Hello, and welcome back to What is YA Anyway? I am, of course, your host, Emma. And today on the podcast, I have Rachel Lynn Solomon. She is a New York Times bestselling author of 7 books in both young adult and adult. She writes mostly romantic comedies. They are all fabulous, I can tell you, because I've read them, I adore them. In this conversation, we talk about diversity in young adult and adult literature. We also talk about the stigma that's been attached to the genre of romance, both in young adult and adult, and we discuss her writing process. It's a really great conversation. I am so excited for you all to listen to it. So without further ado, here we go. After listening to this episode, please head to my website, emmalouisebooks.com, where you can find my analysis of Rachel Lynn Solomon's We Can't Keep Meeting Like This under the tab What Is Why Anyway, the podcast, chapter 3, The Authors. Thank you. I'm extremely happy to have you on today. I want to welcome you to the podcast, What Is YA Anyway? So to begin, I just was wondering if you could tell us a bit about yourself.
Definitely. My name is Rachel Lynn Solomon. I am originally from Seattle, but I moved to Amsterdam about a year and a half ago. All of my books take place in Seattle. And the moment I announced that I was moving, people were like, when are we going to get an Amsterdam book? And I promise, one day. And I write both YA and adult books. My 7th book just came out a couple months ago. Most of my books have been romantic comedies, like I said, set in Seattle, and I focus a lot on mental health, and sex positivity is something that's also really important to me, and then Jewish representation is also something that you will find in all of my books as well.
And I just want to say that you do a fabulous job of mental health representation and racial diversity in your books. I love reading them because I just feel like every part of each character is just so well incorporated into everything that they do. Like, it's not like it just pops up in some scene and then it goes away. Like, it's part of their their arc. And I think that it's just beautifully written every single time.
Oh, thank you. That's something I really try to do, because I feel really strongly that whenever you are writing a character who has, you know, any kind of marginalization, that should not be the defining trait about them. And I think that is such a misstep that people made back when I think people were starting to have like early diversity conversations. And then you get stuck in tokenism, which is obviously a very bad place to be. I just try to treat every character like they are a whole person with, you know, flaws and all. I really appreciate hearing that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So why did you decide to get into writing young adult fiction? I know you also write adult, but what was the draw to writing young adult?
So I think it was kind of an accident at first. When I graduated college, I started writing for fun and just fiction, because I had written it growing up, but never seriously. And then after college, when I finally had some time that I wasn't, you know, immersed in schoolwork and internships and everything, I was like, oh, I remember doing that and enjoying it. And it wasn't until I joined a local writing group that I realized what kinds of books I wanted to be writing. Because the first thing that I attempted, it was kind of in the new adult category, before that really blew up.
Yep.
The main characters were just out of college. Shocker. I was also just out of college. Write what you know. But when I was submitting pages in this writing group, a friend of mine said that my voice sounded very YA. Mm-hmm. And I actually hadn't read YA for many years, because I was someone who, as soon as I got to high school, I was like, all of these Meg Cabot books that I was obsessed with, those are for kids. I'm only going to read Fitzgerald and Hemingway. And I'm going to be, you know, a serious literary person. And I didn't really enjoy reading as much when I did that. So when my friend, you know, made that comment, I was like, I remember I used to love YA. So maybe I will go back and see what I have been missing all these years. And it turned out a lot. I had never heard of Sarah Dessen, John Green, like all of these huge authors who you know, I had just been off in my own world in college studying journalism. And as I tried to catch up on the past, you know, 10 years of YA, I really connected with it. So after that, I tried to write my own YA novel. And then a few books later, I, you know, landed an agent and a book deal. So it really, I always like attribute that friend to like that remark kind of sent me down that path. And she is also a YA author. So it worked out for both of us.
That's amazing. It's funny how sometimes you just like fall into it, you don't even realize. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, yeah, that makes sense, I think.
Right, right.
Yeah. So I love what you said about how when you were getting older, like in your high school years, that you went and you were like, okay, I'm just going to read Fitzgerald and those books are childish, you know, the Metcalf ones, because I had a similar feeling when I was in high school. And I find that when I'm doing the research in young adult, a lot of what people are feeling is like, this isn't serious literature. And what is serious is like you were saying, like Fitzgerald, Dickens, the classics. And what I want to show is that like there are so many classic YA novels and so much rich text going on here that kind of, if we just pay a little bit more attention to, we can see stands up like the classics do. And one of the things I love most about Today, Tonight, Tomorrow is that dynamic between Neil and Rowan, and how Rowan is like, romance is a serious genre and people aren't taking it seriously. And the same thing happens with people who, you know, like YA or children's books, and Neil is over here talking about the classics and saying that they're like real literature. This one quote at the beginning, in his mind, the only thing you're supposed to feel while reading is a sense of superiority. He's the kind of person who believes all real literature has already been written by dead white men. That's just pretty much neatly sums up what this feeling is amongst like romance and young adult. So I'm wondering, did you ever feel any of that when you were getting into young adult and adult romance? And how did you overcome that feeling of like, is this worthy?
For sure. And it's funny because I feel like Neil and Rowan encapsulate different parts of my personality at different stages of time. So like Neil is 100% who I was in high school, and Rowan is like me now with how I feel about romance novels. So it was interesting to write that and kind of try to undo the societal conditioning in the way that I felt people look down on romance novels. But I've definitely experienced judgment as, you know, as I've written, and especially because my first two books, they were YA, but they were a little heavier, a little darker. Mm-hmm. And then as I started writing romantic comedies, and then I think more so in adult romance, you know, I came across people who would make comments like, oh, like, are they going to put a naked man on the cover? Or like, when are you going to write a real book?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And I even remember like being at Powell's bookstore in Portland, and showing my brother-in-law the romance section and being like, is this what you thought a romance novel would look like? Because just the covers these days, they are not, you know, the bodice rippers that that are kind of heavily stigmatized. And they are really marketed toward a different audience. And I think that people who are outside of that world don't really know that. And that is not to say that those more traditional covers don't have the same value as the books being published today. But I think there is a lot being done to like try to erase that stigma and show how inclusive and progressive romance is. And it has always been progressive, but maybe not always as inclusive as it could have been.
Yeah, we talk about judging a book by its cover. And as much as we don't want to, I think that exactly what you're saying, those bodice ripper kind of type covers definitely stigmatize the genre a lot. I remember my mom, I went to book con with her, and there was an author there, and she had written some of like the Harlequin novels. And my mom was so excited to like get her book signed. And she was telling me that she used to like stuff her Harlequin novels under her bed because that's where people couldn't see them. And like they had book covers for them, like all sorts of stuff. And now you can read a romance and people aren't like necessarily like, oh, like that's probably a romance. But then it lends the fact, like, why do we feel the need to even change those covers to a degree? You know what I mean?
Right. And I think a lot of it revolves around the fact that like we as a society are just really quick to judge and write off things that are geared toward women. Even when those things are so like healthy and progressive. And I think a lot of it probably comes from a fear of women like realizing that they can be in happy, healthy relationships and have, you know, some power in relationships. Like I'm thinking about, I will fully admit that I only saw the headline and did not read the full article, but that story that was going around about how heterosexual men make up the majority of people on dating apps and they are struggling because women, are having higher standards when it comes to relationships. And and I really think that is what like men are the most scared of is not having or women that they are able to control and like be submissive.
Yeah. When you read these romance novels, sometimes you think to yourself, like, you know what? I know that it's fiction, yes, but there is like I do deserve this kind of treatment. Like I deserve to be, you know, treated well. And also the women in romance novels now are so much like their own entity. Like they're not just orbiting around the men in the books. And I find that that's something that has really stood out in young adult fiction too. The female protagonists they are the center of their own story and they're pushing it forward. And the men around them are, you know, supporting them, but they are not the main focus. And it's that like really personal development.
Oh yeah. I was even thinking about my recent book, actually, See You Yesterday. There is one male character in the whole book who is good. I think any other guy who's mentioned is like in a really negative way. Like the main character has an absent father and kind of like a bully from high school. And yeah, it's really, I was like, wow, everyone else is a woman or her love interest. So it's funny how those things kind of manifest.
Yeah. And sometimes you're just like, and this is the story now. This is where
we're at. Yeah. I'm like, this is great. This is a great world to live in.
Yeah. So when you're writing characters like Barrett and Quinn and Rowan, how do you get into the headspace of a teenager?
I'm just very immature. no, I mean, I feel like there's something to be said for like a lot of us just having baggage from our teen years and writing that being very cathartic. I was even having a conversation with my husband the other day about how writing romance novels has like helped me process a lot of like harmful messaging that I got as a teenager, just with regard to relationships and intimacy. But with YA characters, I think it's just about, you know, giving them the space to like make mistakes and not putting yourself as you are today into their head too much and like really pressing the buttons for them, because they are going to be messy and like they are not going to do the right thing in every scenario. And I think part of it, sometimes I feel like I'm like rewriting my teen experience in a way that I sort of wish it could have gone. Like none of these books are autobiographical, but like, I'm writing the kinds of books that I wish I had grown up with and that I feel like would have made me like more comfortable with myself and more confident earlier on.
Yeah. Like the books you needed to read, something you would have wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, when you're writing young adult versus when you're writing an adult book, what is the main difference that you find?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people tend to expect that I'm going to say, you know, the level of steamy scenes, which is definitely a difference. But more than that, I think it's just the level of independence that the characters have. So my adult characters can go for a drive and not tell anyone where they're going. They can sit on the couch with a bottle of wine and no one's going to get mad at them. And my YA characters, like their parents are still a very visible, very important part of their lives. Not that that's not true about my adult characters, but they are just, you know, they're more on their own. And I think with YA, everything is just really internal. Mm-hmm. Like even if there are external stakes, so much of it is about, you know, personal growth and that like internal character arc. Whereas with my adult, there's a lot of like, there's a lot of talk about career and kind of what am I putting out into the world? Like what, I guess even the current book that I'm working on, it's like, what am I contributing is kind of the message a little bit.
Yeah. So when you are writing the role of the parents, it's when I'm studying young adult, a lot of what I'm looking at is like where the parents are present in some of the books and where they're not present. Like in a lot of YA fantasy, the parents are pretty much non-existent, like
sure,
or in a dystopia, like they're somewhere, maybe they get like one mention, but more in romance and realistic fiction, the role of the parents is more present, whether it's like they're in the background and you see them sometimes and they're a negative presence or a positive one. And I'm wondering how you go about choosing what the role of the parents is going to be in your books. And in most of them, the parents are present. So why do you feel that it's important to include them?
Yeah. So I did make a conscious decision really early on that I wanted to have present parents and positive relationships with parents. And that's not to say that there isn't conflict, because there definitely is in a lot of instances. But I think that is also something that I kind of decided to combat what I read a lot of growing up, which was absent parents or bad parents. And I had a pretty positive relationship with my parents, and you know, most people I know did too. And I think it's also, obviously, it's extremely important for people to see things that might reflect what they're dealing with at home, if it's something something more difficult. But in my books, I find that I am drawn to conflict that comes from other places, mm-hmm. as opposed to dealing with a parent who is absent or, is dealing with something more difficult.
You also mentioned that a lot of what happens in a YA is internal. Do you feel that your characters grow, or that you write more growth into your characters when you have those like longer inner monologue scenes? So it's like just denser text paragraphs, or when they're talking to other characters in your dialogue?
That's a good question. Probably a mix of both. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes the other characters might point something out to them and it takes them a little while to realize like, oh, that person's assessment of me was kind of, exactly right. And it took me some extra time to sit with that and come to that realization. I even just wrote a scene today that's kind of that thing exactly. I would say it's a mix of those things.
Yeah. Now, when you're writing the side characters who they're having conversations with, I find that in your books, the side characters all feel like very fully formed, and I can imagine them having lives like outside of the main character. So when we get back to them, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like we saw them before, but they've been out living and doing whatever they're doing. How do you write these three-dimensional side characters? What do you include to make it so that they feel like they have fully formed lives and that they're not just like flat and kind of there for the protagonist to be like, can you tell me what you think? And then they say one thing and that's pretty much it.
Sure. So this is funny because I feel like this is actually one of my weakest areas as a writer. Like I will often complain to some of my writer friends. I'm like, why can't I just write loners forever? Why do my characters need friends? Like in an early draft of Today, Tonight, Tomorrow, like the main character has two best friends. And I was like, one is quiet and one is loud. Those are the only two things we know about them. I don't know. I think that I tend to fall into, at least when writing like friend characters, I fall into like the sarcasm trap very yep. easily. And I would love to write some friend characters that break that. But I think I spend the most time, aside from on my main character, mm-hmm. On the love interest. So I feel like they are usually, hopefully very developed. And I kind of try to sketch out their arc mm-hmm. along with my main character. So even if we're not inside their head and like hearing their POV, mm-hmm. I want them to have some kind of growth throughout the book too, that's happening alongside my main character, and they're kind of talking it through, and they're both kind of arriving at a point at the end of the book that enables them to have a more positive relationship with the other person.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And can you talk a bit about your drafting and writing process when it comes to creating the romantic interest?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of chaos. My drafting process. So I read something, many years ago about writing a shitty first draft and trust that my future self could revise it. And that as long as I had something book shaped, even if it was very, very bad, I could come back in later and really play with the sentences and the voice and deepen the characters and all of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So my first drafts are complete garbage. And I'm not saying that in a self-deprecating way. Like, they do not make coherent sense. Mm-hmm. Because I don't allow myself to ever go back. I only write forward. And if I don't know what to write, I will just make like a big line of underscores. So they kind of look like Mad Libs.
Yeah.
Because like, I won't know what detail to put somewhere. Sometimes I won't know like what name to give someone, or, you know, I want them to say something funny, but I can't think of anything funny. Mm-hmm. Some people use brackets. I don't know why underscores are what work for me. So that's usually, I call it a zero draft because it's, no one ever sees it. It's just for me to sketch out the book, and I'm working off an outline too.
Yeah.
So usually after that, I might have a sense of what I want the romance to look like, but by the time I get to that, the end of that book, I will have already had some like other ideas pop up. Mm-hmm. And I'll have made little notes for myself, like, you know, give this character a mole on their shoulder and mention that several times or yeah. something. Or this character needs a hobby, or they need to do something fun together. Mm-hmm. And just kind of trying to chart like specific bonding moments and moments where their relationship is shifting throughout the book, because, you know, it's not a straight line. Like, there are going to be high points and low points kind of all scattered throughout. And like, you want to, but I guess at the same time, you want to make sure the tension is building exponentially upward, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it really just kind of builds and builds on each draft, and each one gets more and more fleshed out.
Your drafting process, how long does it take for you to go from like the outline stage to that zero draft into like a more fully formed draft? Or does it obviously probably vary book to book?
It varies. The shortest I've ever done is like less than 3 weeks.
Okay.
Less than 3 weeks to get to the end of like a zero draft.
Okay.
So that was, you know, 60,000 words or so in 3 weeks. And that was with The X Talk, which was my first adult book. But usually to go from outline to a draft that is suitable for other human eyes, it's probably like 2 to 3 months. I would love for it to be a little faster. But for some reason, I've found myself writing a little slower than I used to, because I feel like there are just a lot of voices in your head sometimes.
Yeah. So I know exactly what you mean.
Especially you just read like one too many reviews and you're like, you know, you hear people say, oh, the third act conflict was complete garbage and it didn't need to happen that way. And then I'm staring at my outline, like, does this third act conflict work?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I just second guess myself a lot.
Yeah. How often do you read reviews?
So I don't seek them out.
Okay.
But when I'm tagged in things on Instagram, I will skim them. And if it's, you know, 4 or 5 stars, like I will comment on it. I will, you know, and thank the person. If it's 3 or lower, I will just untag myself and then just be bummed for a couple seconds. I've gotten to the point where like, my eyes will just like zero in on the star rating if it's clear, and then just immediately like untag myself and exit.
Mm-hmm.
But Instagram is my only social media platform at this point. So, and what they do now is they like DM you when someone tags you in a post.
Yes. Yeah. I've noticed that now,
which is really horrible, because you're just getting like a negative review right in your
face. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just flood right in. They just,
right. Whatever. And it's, you know, sometimes it happens on positive reviews too. Cause like you read a lovely positive review and you're typing your comment, like, thank you so much. Like, I'm so glad it resonated with you. And then you hit enter and then you see that the comment is right above yours is like, I can't believe you liked it. I thought this sucked.
No. Oh no.
And like, I don't know. I've gotten a thick skin about it, but it does frustrate me because I think there, it just seems like there is so much discourse in the community, like don't tag authors in negative reviews. And yet it happens constantly.
Yes. That's like one of the main things on NetGalley too. They're like, if you didn't like this, can you please not tag the author? Like,
oh, I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, they do. They have that on. And also when I get like emails from publishers or something, or if they send me a book, there'll be like a note in it that's like, if you didn't like this book, please don't tag the author.
Oh, and, wow. Okay. That's yeah, great that they do that.
So, they're trying, I think. Yeah. But I would feel so bad to tag someone in a negative review because it's like, it's just me, not you.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So some of them have stuck in my head more than others. And I did used to read Goodreads reviews. Mm. I mean, I would stop at a certain point. Like, there's just no way to read every single one of them. That would,
yeah,
just a recipe for misery. But... yeah, there are definitely things that stick with you. And like, they just, when you're stuck on something in a book, like actually what I do these days, and it's really bad, is when I'm stuck on something, or if I'm unsure about something in a book, or if I'm like, I like this, but what would readers think? Sometimes my mind like writes up a negative Goodreads review.
Oh no.
Know that it's impossible to please everyone. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the longer you do it, the more you just realize all the ways that people can be unhappy with something.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you find that you read reviews more when you were first starting out, or was like that definitely something that you didn't do?
No. I read them all when I was first starting out. And it's kind of embarrassing to admit that, but it was more because it felt very surreal. And those reviews felt like this small way to make it feel tangible to me.
Yeah.
Especially because I debuted with a pretty quiet book and like, there weren't tons of reviews. So it was manageable.
Yeah.
but like, yeah, I mean, I would never go back and read those now. And with my, you know, when a new book is coming out, you know, I will see things on Instagram and just kind of, I will read them. Now I tend to skim when I'm tagged in things, but I will read the ones, the early ones when I'm tagged, just to be like, okay, a few people didn't hate it. I can be at peace.
I can relax now.
Yeah. And,
like, the Bookstagram community is very vibrant now. Like, there's so many different people like posting reviews or photos. Do you find that that's a really helpful space for authors in terms of like marketing and also, I guess, just connecting with readers?
I do. I've found it to be a really positive one. And I've met a lot of people through it, you know, other authors, Bookstagrammers, like Bookstagrammers who have become friends. Like, actually, my first friend in Amsterdam was a like Bookstagrammer that I met on Instagram. Awesome. Yeah. And now, like, I just saw her last weekend. So I really think it's a great place just for like, for connecting with readers. I do sometimes miss just like the water cooler element of Twitter, but it started to give me a lot of anxiety every time I went onto it. And like the scrolling just felt like a little more endless and mindless than Instagram does. And then I know, of course, that there are a lot of readers on TikTok, and that's just something that I feel like I am like my time is best used on just one platform, and like trying to be as present on that one as I can. And putting all of my energy into that, because I just know, like, I know TikTok has a steep learning curve, and if I put my energy into that, like, I wouldn't have enough time for writing.
Yeah. There's only so much one person can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to pivot a bit and talk about how you represent mental illness in your books and mental health in general. I found that like Quinn was such an amazing character to read about with her OCD and anxiety, the representation that you created with her. And I think part of that for me, at least, was that we were in her first person perspective, and the way you wrote out those scenes where she was like checking Esther's water bowl, or she was like, I have to go back and do this, felt like we were there with her. And one of the lines I just loved the most and could really relate to was, it's a strange feeling knowing you are doing something illogical and being unable to stop yourself. Mm-hmm. And you see her doing that and thinking about it, So I'm wondering, do you think that, I guess I have a few questions. Is the first person perspective really helpful for you when you're writing about like anxiety, for example? And how do you handle such a sensitive topic with such like great depth?
Oh, well, thank you very much. And that's, yeah, I mean, I remember writing that line and that just feeling, I mean, plucked from my brain, of course, because I was the one writing it, but also definitely from my own experience. The first person perspective is just something that feels very natural to me when writing. I mean, I would love to write something. I've written short stories in third person. I would love to write a book in third person at some point, but I love the immediacy and the urgency of first person. Yeah. And I find that like the voice just comes a little easier that way. When you're in someone's head and they're, you know, deep in their like OCD thoughts, and pretty much all of Quinn's experience was drawn from mine. I feel like it can be like, I hope it feels, very like, I don't want to overuse like the word immediate or urgent, but like, I hope it feels very like raw and authentic.
Yeah.
Just kind of putting, I guess it has this duality of like helping people understand what it's like to have that brain, and also helping people see that like there are other people who have these exact same, you know, obsessive thoughts and compulsive behaviors, and that like whatever you are doing, if you think that it is, you know, weird, or, you know, think other people are just telling you that you're being paranoid, or, you know, any of the kind of euphemisms that people use for obsessive behaviors, like you're totally not.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that feels like the main character is talking to you. Mm-hmm. And do you think that when writing YA, it's important to have that kind of almost dialectical relationship between the reader and the book?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I feel like it is not something that I consciously think about. I know I do try to scale back on things that make it seem like the character is aware that they're telling a story to someone. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult to get rid of them completely, because sometimes you really just want to hit someone with something like, you know, and it was all going great until whatever. I mean, that's not a great line, but just kind of that, the gravity of that just sometimes lands in a different way. But that is not something, like, if you're writing in first person present tense, mm-hmm. like that is not something that like that person's brain or like inner monologue would create.
Yeah. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Right. So there definitely is some, like a little bit of framing going on. But I try to make it like as minimal as possible, because I don't want the reader to be, I think that takes the reader out of it. Like when they're very aware that someone is like, let me tell you a story.
Yes.
Like, you're not going to believe this.
Yeah, I agree. And I just like, when you're writing the present tense, it's so fluid, because it feels very much so like we're in their consciousness. But do you ever find it difficult to stay in present tense and not be like going to past tense, because you kind of know where it's going, so you know where they're headed or what happened or is happening?
You know, I think one thing I do think about with regard to that is like what I'm showing on the page versus what I'm summarizing, because I do tend to use past tense like in tiny little summary sections. So, yep. You know, they're somewhere at the end of a chapter, next chapter, they're somewhere else, setting the scene, and then just like a few lines that it is explaining in past tense how they got there.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, the first YA that I worked on, it was in past tense, and I was reading a lot of present tense, and I was like, huh, what if I rewrote this in present tense? And it was awkward at first, but once I got into it, it just flowed really well. And now that just feels the most natural to me, and it's what I prefer to read too.
Yeah. Do you draw from your own personal experiences when you're writing? And when you're writing a young adult, do you ever draw from an adult experience and feel like you have to almost like teenage it?
For sure. Yeah. Sometimes I worry that I will run out of experiences to write about. I'm like, oh, okay, I've already written about writing. I've written about romance novels. I've written about journalism. I used to play music. I've written about music. It's gotten to a point where I'm like, I'm running out of hobbies. Like what else can I write about? One great thing is just, we are all still growing. And like I was said, I haven't written about Amsterdam yet, which is definitely something I want to explore. I think that my books, even if I start out with a little distance between me and the character, it kind of comes back around during revision. Like this book that I'm working on right now, the main character is, she went to school for journalism, but she always thought she might want to write fiction, but she decided to study journalism because she thought that it would be more practical. Mm-hmm. And as I'm revising it, I'm just noticing that I'm giving her more and more of my feelings about studying journalism and like setting aside fiction because I thought that it was not realistic, which was not something I intended when I started writing the book. I thought she was going to be full steam ahead, like super passionate about journalism. And it's just kind of funny that I'm like, oh, okay, so I am writing this experience that I had that I did not set out to write, but it's something I'm familiar with. So
yeah. When you're revising after you've gotten to the draft where other people have read it, how, when you filled out all those little details, do you keep everything in order so that it's really fluid?
So I tend to tease out like one thread at a time. So I know right now, because I'm revising right now, there are a few threads that I want to make sure I follow through the whole book. So actually in this book that I'm working on, it's an adult book and the hero, so not the POV character, has pretty severe OCD. Mm-hmm. And very different from what I wrote about with Quinn, but still something that is, borrowed a bit from my experience. And it's something that I want to, because my first drafts are so thin, I knew that I wanted to deepen it throughout the book. Mm-hmm. So I just have a little note to myself that's just like, draw through this thread. So I'll be going through every chapter and going through like, okay, here, like these are some of his obsessions, like how would they manifest here? And what would my main character be observing right now? How does that change once he tells her about his OCD? And then I'm doing that with multiple threads. Yeah. And that tends to be something I save toward the end after I've made the big changes. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite there yet with this one. Still kind of doing some bigger, chapter rewrites. And it's everything from like, something relatively big, like a character's OCD to, my character has, or just like a character's sense of style, right? Like, not going to explain what they're wearing in every single scene, but I realized that I mentioned in chapter one what she was wearing and then never again. So I'm like, okay, maybe we should like give a sense of what she's wearing at some point.
One of the other things that I want to talk to you about in regards to what you include in your books is body positivity. We have Barrett and also Russell in Weather Girl. And you include fat main characters, both as female and as male. And I just want to say that was really refreshing to see a male hero who was not like the washboard abs. And I loved him with my entire heart. I just could gush about him all day. He's one of my favorites.
Thank you so much.
and Barrett as well. I love that. It made me feel like very much like there were being strides made in this genre. And how do you include that and write these characters in a way that feels like, they're confident and happy with themselves? So it's not like, oh, like I have this part of my personality or this, my body. And, I feel this way because we have these characters who are really like, I'm aware and I'm confident and I know what people might think, but like, I am happy in who I am and I'm so much more than my body.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, this is like kind of trying to undo negative things that I saw growing up and like even into my 20s. You read so many romance novels and I think that there's definitely a lot more body diversity when it comes to women.
Yes.
But yeah, like all the men have the exact same body type and it's just boring and it doesn't reflect real life. And I want readers to feel like they can see their relationships and like their interests reflected. I wanted to feel like I could see my relationship reflected. And it's just something that I was like, why? That Weather Girl's definitely not the first book to do that. But I was like, why does this not happen?
Yeah. And it made me think that too. It was like, why are we not having these men who also have diverse bodies in these books? Because you're right. It's the same thing. He's always like 6'4" and he has a great body and he's got like really good, like coiffed hair. It's perfect. And I also love that Neil was the same height as Rowan. That was great. I was like, this is amazing because they're always so tall.
I know. And I also feel like, I mean, this is like a dunk on myself because I totally do this, but I also feel like every hero has the same hairstyle in every way, in every like YA and romance novel. And it's just messy.
Yes. That is always like nice, like perfectly messy.
Yeah. Like it's messy. It's tousled. It's disheveled. And I do it too. And I love it. but yeah. And I think there's also a lot of stigma with regard to men and mental health, which is something that I'm trying to touch on in the book I'm working on right now with the hero who has OCD. Because there is, yeah, again, like there is so much more inclusion and like diversity with female characters, but I think a lot of male characters are still expected to be one type, and it's just it's uninteresting.
Yeah, I fully agree. I agree.
Yeah, I will always choose a beta hero over an alpha. Just give me all the betas.
I love that. I always read these books. I'm like, yes to these men. They're so great. They're just. Do you find like when you're writing these diverse characters, whether it's racially diverse or body diverse, writing about their mental health issues, do you find that, or do you think, I guess, that it's equally important or perhaps more important to include it in young adult books so that these young readers can see the diversity? Or do you think that it's equally as important, like obviously across all adult, young adult, et cetera?
Equally important. And I know that I have a lot of crossover readers, readers who found me in YA and read me in adult or vice versa. Actually, my favorite thing that I've ever gotten was I got a letter from a reader in the mail and it started. Yeah. And I kept it because it was amazing. And at the end, it was like, I am 13 and I can't wait to read your adult novels when I am old enough.
Oh, that's so cute. Oh
my God. I loved that so much. But really, when it comes to diversity, I just want my books to reflect the world that we live in. And I get so frustrated when I read a book and every character is white and straight and able-bodied. And that's just not the world.
Yeah. You include a lot about your Jewish heritage too. Can you talk about why that was important for you and where did you like, how much did you see it represented before you started writing or misrepresented?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm a broken record on this, but it also goes back to things that I didn't see growing up. All that I read were Holocaust books or you had like a one-off mention in a book where it's like the main character's best friend couldn't hang out on Friday because of Shabbat. So you're getting these just very superficial mentions, or you're getting something that's really steeped in tragedy. Yeah. So the first four books that I wrote that did not get published did not have Jewish main characters. Because I truly felt like I didn't have any models for seeing Jewish characters in a contemporary book.
Yeah.
And then it was my fifth book, or my fifth manuscript that became my debut novel, was the first time that I wrote Jewish characters. And I feel like there was something to that, to like me writing authentically, that, you know, I think I was also obviously growing as a writer, hopefully. I don't think it was an accident that my first published book was the first time that I wrote Jewish characters.
Yeah.
And even now, like there are probably definitely fewer than 20 traditionally published books per year that have Jewish main characters written by Jewish authors. I mean, I would even say I used to track them. I've unfortunately, lost the thread of it a bit, but it was usually around like 10.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Which is quite sad when you think about it.
Yeah. When you think about how many books are published.
Yeah. So I kind of made a vow to myself, I feel like I'm always making vows to myself, and you know, trying to undo things that I heard as a kid and teen. But I decided after writing my first book that all of my main characters were going to be Jewish, you know, varying levels of observance. And a lot of them reflect my experience, and a lot of them reflect things that I didn't experience that I am, you know, researching and talking to Jewish friends about. But that's something that remains pretty important to me.
Yeah, I think that you do a great job too with that, because I'm not Jewish, I'm Catholic, but I feel like I learn from your characters. Like I understand.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you.
And like, I feel like it's not something where I am disconnected from it in any way. Like I am still relating to them, and I'm relating to like what they're telling me about themselves and learning from them. And I think that that's something that you do really well in your young adult novels. And I can imagine other young readers learning as well, who might come from another background.
Oh, thank you. I'm really happy to hear that. And I, you know, a lot of times in like discussions about diversity and Judaism kind of occupies an interesting space in those discussions, because I think a lot of people don't quite know how to engage with it. That's kind of a different conversation, but there's a lot of talk about books being both windows and mirrors, right? So like something you can see yourself in, but also something that other people can look in on and, you know, learn about from someone else's perspective.
Absolutely. And I think that what some of the really great young adult books do, yours included, is they do both. And even in the stuff that you can like see yourself reflected in and learn in like the same situation as well, which is really nice to see too.
Oh, thank you.
So what I'm wondering, like, what are some of your favorite young adult books? Do you read YA now?
Yeah. So I feel like I read less than I used to, which is sort of a weird thing to admit, but most of what I'm reading these days are things that are not yet published. So things that I'm giving a blurb for. Yeah. And it's a mix of YA and adult. I definitely try to read things that are already published. Like I was on vacation the other week and like read a book, like an actual paper book that had been published already from front to back. And I was like, that is such a joy. I should do that more often. Like I mentioned earlier, Meg Cabot will always be number one for me. I really loved all of Stephanie Perkins's YA romances. I was reading those like when I was getting back into YA. Let me see. I mean, so many of the things that come to mind are just like things that I've read recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really loved She Gets the Girl by Rachel Lippincott.
Yep.
And there's a book coming out this November, I believe, October or November, called How to Excavate a Heart by Jake Maya Arlow. And it's something that really stuck with me. It's a queer Jewish rom-com set over winter break. And it's about two college students in DC, actually.
Oh. So
you would probably find it interesting. And it just, the voice is really phenomenal. So those are a couple of things that have stuck with me lately.
Amazing. Well, I guess for one of my final questions is, when you're writing your books, how much do you think about your reader? Or is it mostly like you're hoping that from your own personal experiences and from talking to others that it resonates because it's something that's like, that is personal? Or are you thinking about like what other people might want?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's more of the latter. I tend to write for my, you know, I hope I am writing for myself and like for my teen self first and foremost, because if you're only writing to an audience, and I feel like that is really close to only writing for, you know, the business of it and like just writing because it's your job. And, you know, I think anyone in the industry would agree that like if this job is like too stressful and too difficult for it to not be something you enjoy, first of all, like that has to be number one. I believe that so strongly. And even if I have, you know, those reviews in my head sometimes, or like I pause at a difficult moment, and I'm like, what would a mean Goodreads reviewer write about this? I do think about the readers sometimes, but I feel like if I am staying true to what, to like the reasons that I wanted to be a writer and like the topics that are important to me, and even if I'm covering some of the same ground throughout my books and maybe exploring things in a slightly different way each time, I think that the reader, that they will still resonate, because that's, those are the kinds of things that people have come to expect from my books, I hope.
Definitely. So for my final question, I wanted to circle back to what Rowan talked about in Today, Tonight, Tomorrow, and how romance and the things that we read, whether that, like geared towards women especially, and that give us pleasure, have been deemed like not worthy as much as the classics have. And do you feel that in both the adult romance world and the young adult, that we're making strides closer to getting these books the recognition and deeming them as like definitely valid of their worth?
I think so, for sure. There are, like, I know a number of books. I think if you even just look at like the adult, you know, New York Times bestsellers, like majority of those are romance.
Yeah.
One of my, Today, Tonight, Tomorrow was a finalist for the Washington State Book Award, which was like kind of an all-time, like an author bucket list item of mine, because Washington State is just like a really ingrained in me and just a kind of a huge part of who I am. But I think it's really unusual for romantic comedies to be recognized in awards that are not like romance specific. I definitely do think that they are gaining more respect and like with regard to literary merit than they used to. You know, like romances and romantic comedies are often getting like starred reviews from Kirkus, Publishers Weekly, like the other trade organizations. I think people do definitely, obviously people in the industry take them seriously, but I think that the bigger they get, the more people realize like the kind of power that they hold. I mean, just, you know, I was at the beach last week, and like every other person was reading Colleen Hoover.
Yeah.
So it's awesome.
Yep. And it's amazing to see it like happening. And so I just wanted to thank you again for joining me today and for sharing so much with our audience and for my thesis project. It's been like so nice talking to you, and it's just been a joy for me.
Oh, of course. Yeah, Emma, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun, and those questions were great. And I am wishing you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. So like I said, such an amazing conversation with Rachel. She provided so many great insights about the writing process, and she talked a lot about the field and what, you know, what strides have really been made in bringing romance, whether that be young adult or adult, up to this level of a worthy genre to read. And it definitely is. There's so much there. The texts are so rich. I'm looking forward to diving in and analyzing her books, which you can find on my website a little bit of, and also in my thesis paper, which I'm going to be sharing. So stay tuned for more. And as always, I can't wait to have you back. Thanks. Bye.